This is Radio Sai Global Harmony Asia Stream, and you're listening to our live broadcast being broadcast straight from our studios in Prashanthi Nilayam. The time now, dear listeners, is 12:38, and just as it happens every Thursday, my brother Arvind and me, Prem, from Team Radio Sai, are here to present you the afternoon satsang. Sai Ram, Arvind, and a warm Sai Ram to all our listeners.
Sai Ram, Prem, offering our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. As I was just walking into the studio's frame, I couldn't help but notice the wonderful two trees that are just adjoining our studios. They have blossomed and the purple flowers have filled the skies, so to say.
Okay.
And not only have they filled the skies, they have the flowers are dropping, and so the whole ground seems strewn with flowers. It's such a beautiful sight. I was just thinking that February is one of the best times to be in Prashanthi Nilayam. You know how summers are in Puttaparthi. In the months of May, June, or even earlier, say April, it gets very hot, it's sweltering, temperatures rise to almost 37, 38 degrees, even touch 40 degrees at times.
Right.
At the same time, during the months of November, December, it's very cold, it's chill. But this February, it's a beautiful mean. It is just when the winter is ending and the summer is setting in, and there is so much of beauty. Flowers have blossomed, as just now, you know, I described about this. It almost feels that there is so much of divinity and love and even romance in the air. You know, that's what I felt. And, you know, worldwide, this is even as we put on our internet today, you go, the Google Doodle says it all. Today is being celebrated as the Valentine's Day.
Right.
And for us being in Swami's fold, this I feel should arouse many thoughts, many feelings. Because according to me, I feel, you know, love is one of the most sought after yet most misunderstood thing in the universe.
Right, definitely, because you know, many times when you sit back and think what really love is, I think there's nothing concrete we can lay our hands upon. There's nothing we can say that, yes, this is it. Most other emotions we can maybe give a tangible description or a definition. But love is always so obscure, you know.
Correct. And, you know, Swami, if we hear his discourses, so many discourses, he always stresses on love, love, love. He has sung the famous song which says, love is my form, truth is my breath. Love is his form. And I mean, if you ask anybody what Swami stood for, anybody would say love is what Swami stands for, right?
Really? In fact, you know, I was talking to one of our colleagues, Arvind Sai, the other day. The other Arvind in Radio Sai. You know, he has this very enviable task of categorizing Swami's discourses. He's in the task of coordinating the effort of getting some of these describes which have never been aired on radio, transcribed, translated, and looking at, you know, a kind of a practical time frame where we can share this with all our listeners. So he is in that job of coordinating this whole effort. So he has heard a number of discourses over the years. You know, when you do it as a job, as a professional job, you tend to listen more keenly. You tend to listen to a lot of discourses in a, I would say, in a little dispassionate manner, you know, without getting emotionally involved with the thing.
Because you are supposed to check it for its technicalities.
Right. So, you know, if you or I listen to a discourse, what would appeal to us in that discourse is what is predominant in our mind. You know, if there's a question ringing in our minds, that would be answered, and that would be the most important message in that discourse.
Correct. And that's why after any discourse you ask anybody, each person says, Swami said this, Swami said this, Swami said this. That's because each person takes according to a reflection of what he or she is undergoing.
Right. So I asked, you know, Arvind Sai, that according to you, what is the most recurrent message in Swami's discourses? You know, is it seva or is it, you know, is it devotion? What is it? What is one message, if I ask you, which is the most predominantly occurring message in all Swami's discourses you've heard so far? So he just paused for a moment, he thought, and he said, I think it should, hands down, love will be the winner. Swami always speaks of love.
So, exactly, Prem. Swami always speaks of love, and Swami has said that love is the panacea for all the problems. Right. He gives so many examples and he states it forthright that love is a panacea for all problems. And yet, you know, if we see the world today, if we think of the books, the stories that are being written, the movies that are being made, the dramas that are being portrayed and the things that are happening on a day-to-day basis in our society, love seems to be a cause for many problems, cause for a lot of frustration, cause for many irritations. I mean, how many times have we heard of this concept of unrequited love, mm-hmm. of a love story that is being incomplete because one does not respond and...
misunderstandings in the name of love.
Correct. So, see, now there are two things. Either love is not the solution for all the problems, or the way that we in the world understand love is wrong. Now, since Swami has said that love is a panacea for all problems, so there's no debating on that. Love is the panacea for all problems.
If we consider Swami as the one who has come to solve all problems, as an avatar is supposed to do.
As our Lord.
And if his predominant message is love, then definitely love is supposed to be the solution. It cannot be the cause of all the problems.
And therefore, if there are problems being caused
in the name of love,
it must be there's something faulty in our understanding.
Right. And in fact, you know, I was just, if you listen to Swami's discourses, one thing which comes to you is, Swami says love is divine. Love is God. Prem Ishwar hai.
Ishwar prem hai.
God is love. And in fact, most people who don't subscribe to the thought of a God Almighty also believe that if there is something which is
divine.
Above everything, anything which is divine, that is love.
Correct.
Okay. But if you look at the, you know, I was just going through the dictionary definition of love. It actually puts it down. It doesn't give any of these divine status. It says love is attachment, and love is attraction, and love is affection.
You know, Prem, this problem about love, it is so predominant. I am saying this not only because of exposure, but also because of experience. You know, there is this thing called unrequited love, which has often been defined as love that is not understood or reciprocated by the object of one's love.
Okay.
You know, this one-sided love. And every time, you know, when we get to know the story, we get to know the story of the person who loves an object or a person or something with all his or her heart, and the object or the other person does not reciprocate or respond. And all our portrayals have been of the sorrow that this person undergoes. I have also seen personally in my life people on the other end who, you know, who receive so much of love which they don't want actually, you know. The other end of the unrequited love. So, you know, the admired feels, why is this admirer stalking me? Why is he or she harassing me? Why can't he or she just let go of me? And the admired feels that his or her life is so miserable because of the admirer. And the admirer feels that his or her life is so miserable because of the admired. So
it's like the suffocating grip of love.
Yeah, it's the binding force of love, if you can say so. And it's like the grass being greener on the other side. The one who is admired feels that his or her life is so choked and suffocating. And the one who is admiring feels that his life is meaningless and so empty, and he is giving himself or herself completely, and the other side is not reciprocating. And so, you see broken hearts, and these pieces of these hearts seem to lie scattered along the life highways. So, and this kind, you know, though when we speak, it looks like it's always in the case of romantic relationships. Somehow, you know, today is Valentine's Day and such things are coming up. But it is not as if this unrequited love happens only in such romantic relationships. Even if you take platonic love, which is friendships, normal friendships, a friend or an acquaintance or a colleague has become on many occasions an object of unrequited love. You know, you feel that your friend is not as good as a friend to you as you are to him or her.
That happens quite often, right?
Correct. And this one-way love becomes a problem. And you know, there are poems, there are songs which, you know, glorify this, telling that one-way love is better than not having known love at all. But the person who is stuck in this one-way love feels that it would have been better had this not been at all. If right. I could have been as independent or aloof as like the other person, the object of my unrequited love. And I'm speaking of this with so much of gusto because I have had this being on both ends of the spectrum many times in life.
Okay.
Which made me wonder, what is this true love all about?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a myth? They say, you know, love elicits love.
Right.
Then why is it not doing so? Because these are cases where love apparently is not returned. And all these, while the person that is admiring feels, why is love not being returned?
Mm-hmm.
The person who is the object of the admiration feels that when I'm not reciprocating, why is the other person not just leaving me alone and getting away?
Okay.
It's apparently like a lose-lose situation. Okay, and these questions, they arise like a gusto and they tear apart your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is why I was saying that there is something wrong in our understanding of love. Because when the scriptures, when God, when all the great people, when everyone says that love is a solution, how can love cause such tumult, such fury and such pain and such depression in the heart? So there must be something wrong in our understanding of love. And when today, according to some cultures, if it is being celebrated as the day of love, I feel it will do good if we try to understand something about love.
Indeed, Arvind, you know, if you just look at the English word love, you know, as I said, how it is maybe misinterpreted even in our dictionaries.
Hmm.
If you look at the Indian languages,
mm.
You know, if you look at our South Indian languages, Kannada, Tamil or Telugu or all these, in all these, there are two words, you know, used to describe different types of love.
Mm.
One love which you can call, you know, interpersonal love, like as you said, platonic love or, you know,
romantic love.
There's a different word for that, and love, what Swami refers to, has a different word.
Yeah, now that you say so, Prem, for example, in Kannada, the kind of romantic love and all this friendship love, all this is called as Preeti, while the love towards the divine, the higher kind of love, is called Prema.
Right. I think that's what happens even in Telugu. Swami always says Prema Swarupulara. And I think the same thing, the word for interpersonal love is Preeti in this one. So there is a clear, you know, demarcation between universal or divine love and affection or attachment. So I think, you know, all the while we are getting confused between these two. You know,
but in English it is used interchangeably.
Right. So I think the love which Swami is referring to is that universal love, that prema, where Swami is going on saying that we are all embodiments of that love. I think our endeavor should be to understand that love. And I think somewhere, you know, that love is there. Even in this preeti, that prema is there. Even in this so-called attachment, I think that pure love is there. But I think our focus is more on the attachment aspect rather than on the universal aspect.
That must be the case, Prem, because Swami glorifies love. In fact, he says, love through thought is shanti. Love through words is satya. And love through action is dharma. Out of satya, dharma, shanti, prema, Swami says, if you have prema, satya, dharma and shanti automatically arise.
Exactly.
So that is the power of prema. Then how can love be the cause for ashanti, asatya and adharma?
Exactly. In fact, the other beautiful explanation I heard was, you know, there are only two emotions in the human relationships.
Hmm.
There are only two predominant emotions a human feels, and all other emotions and all other thoughts and are all, you know, combinations of these two. And he said one is love and the other is fear.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and if you actually look at it, attachment and the pain which comes of whatever you spoke of, I think it's when that fear comes in that love factor. When you love somebody, when you have the fear of losing, the fear of not getting what you want, the fear of not being, you know, the love not being reciprocated, I think all that causes the confusion.
Yeah, that causes attachment, that causes jealousy, that causes everything.
But that love which is, you know, beyond the grip of fear might be that pure love. And I think that's why when Swami makes a beautiful statement, which kind of uses these two emotions. How using these two emotions, how to attain your goal. Swami says, love for God and fear of sin.
Daiva Preeti, Papa Bhiti.
Papa Bhiti. And again, Swami goes on to say, what is fear of sin? You know, fear of losing God's love. And almost like Swami is saying, the most important thing is you love God and you have the fear of losing God's love. So both is, you know, that love which is turned towards God, I think is our easiest way to reach that understanding of pure love. But I think that we'll come back to later, God's love.
You said that, you know, God's love is the solution for everything, and that's why Swami says that you should have Daiva Preeti, that is love God, and fear of losing God's love. You know, this triggered in me one episode that happened during my undergraduate days.
Okay.
And as I said, personally, I have been a person, it's in the past, it is solved thanks to Lord's love and mercy, but getting, you know, attached in friendships. What do I mean by getting attached? You know, it is something like when a friend of mine is sick, I go tend to him, I help him in the hostel, I do everything, I serve him more than what he would have expected, you know, it's almost delight for him. But then what happens is when I fall sick, I expect the same to be done to me by him. And when that doesn't happen, I'm disappointed.
Right.
I'm so sad. And you know, Prem, that sadness and disappointment in those times used to be so much or so intense that there is somebody else who is coming and getting me my food and helping me when I'm sick. And I'm blind to all that. All the while my thoughts are dwelling on that one person who did not come when I needed him. You know, that is a kind of blindness that comes when you get attached. But that is what I used to suffer from. And at that time I was studying in the Vrindavan hostel in Bangalore. And I began to pray to Swami. I was saying, Swami, what is this? Why do not people reciprocate love? You have said love is the greatest force. What's happening? Is love failing? You know, this attachment blinds you and it makes you in such a way that you wrongly think of yourself as being very noble. You misunderstand attachment as great love. And this happened, and I used to pray to Swami so much so that I began to, you know, analyze the whole day. I saw that the time between 9:30 at night to 10 o'clock was the worst period for me. Why? Because Swami, in his divine intelligence, has planned the hostel schedule in such a perfect manner that from morning till evening you are occupied with something or the other.
Right.
Physically, mentally, spiritually, in games, in sports, cultural activities. That's why one Swami had said that all that a student needs for redemption is to just follow the hostel schedule.
Right.
But 9:30, when the study hours used to end at night, and 10 o'clock would be the good night time, that is when lights are put off, this 9:30 to 10 was a free half an hour. And that used to be the time when I used to go, you know, meet up with friends, chat with them, talk to them, and foster this attachment that was, you know, growing. Many times I began to dread this half an hour because it had become an addiction. The minute study hours is over, I want to go out and talk to my friends and hang out with them in half an hour. And in that half an hour, I would get so attached to so many. It was not that it was one or two, it was about 7-8 people whom I was attached to, and it looked as if they are all taking turns to give me kicks one by one, you know, by letting me down. So this was my condition, and a person who has not gone through this will feel that I am a fool. But a person who has gone through this will completely empathize with me and tell, yes, yes, that is what. So it's about going through that. Anyway, we had to come to Prashanthi Nilayam for the sports meet. We were here and the sports meet went on very well. And January 14th, as always, the day of Shankranti is the day of prize distribution. Everybody in my class considered me as specially blessed because usually all the prizes would be received by the captains for the different events.
Right.
And all the captains would be, as you know, from the senior most classes.
Right.
Because at their final year, they get the chance. But though I was not in the senior most class, they had given me a chance to be the vice captain of the debate team, and we had won the debate. And I was selected to go and pick the winner's shield from Swami's divine hands, along with the captain.
Okay.
And this was a privilege, this was a great chance that a second year undergraduate student was getting. But I was not happy with that. In my mind I was praying, Swami, what I want is not that shield. I want a shield that will protect me from these hurts. My heart is being ripped apart, Swami. And you know, in that kind of pain, you become very self-sympathetic. You start glorifying the pain that you're going through and you make yourself a martyr. While it's nothing but a simple case of deep attachment. Stupid attachment. Hopeless attachment. So I was going on this way praying, and I even wrote down a letter telling Swami. I even wrote down the same thing that I said here, that Swami, 9:30 to 10 in the night, you have not put anything in the schedule and that is the time when I get attached, please help me. And my prayer was, Swami, when you give that shield, I will give you this letter, you accept this letter.
Okay.
That is your way of telling me that I will give you the shield that you are asking.
Mm-hmm.
That was my prayer, and I went up to Swami, and that day Swami didn't even look at me. You know, he gave the shield to the captain.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to stretch out my hand to just touch the shield so that it feels that I am also receiving it from Swami.
Okay.
And then Swami immediately turned to the photographer and posed so that we have a picture. I also posed, but all the time in my mind it was going on that I have to give this letter to Swami, I have to give this letter to Swami. I offered the letter to Swami and he refused it. And I returned back to my place. I was sad, I was disappointed, I was dejected. And everyone around me thought I was crazy. Here's a guy who has just walked up and received a shield from Swami and he's sad. Why is he sad? I mean, nobody could understand it and I didn't try to explain it also. The next day we all left back for Vrindavan. We reached the hostel and I was just telling Swami, now I have to wait till Shivratri to get my problem solved. You know, because the next time we will be visiting Parthi would be during Shivratri. I was just wondering, Swami, how will I pass this the next 1 month? Somehow I know what will happen. The study hours will get over, the night bell will ring and I will go and start talking to my friends again. It's the same pit that I'll fall into again and again. That night, the bell rang at 9:30 and somebody came to my room and said that the warden has called for me. So I went to the warden's office and Prem, what he told me just swept me off my feet. He said, this time in Prashanthi Nilayam when we went, apparently, Swami had asked for some boys to do security duty at his residence in Thrai Vrindavan.
Okay.
You know, Thrai Vrindavan, there are guards taking care of it. Sevadal volunteers are there. And there is also a dog that used to be let loose in the grounds.
Yeah, very famous one.
Name was Raja, and you know, we used to dread the dog, very ferocious Doberman dog. But apparently, Swami had said that there should be some students who will sleep inside Thrai Vrindavan,
mm-hmm.
okay, and do security. And the warden told me that you are one of those boys whom Swami has selected. Are you ready to sleep in Thrai Vrindavan? I mean, that was a rhetorical question. Who will say no? I said, yes, sir. He said, then from tomorrow onwards, every night by 8 o'clock, you should be inside. And he said, this is a sacred duty that Swami has given you. And this duty continues not only when Swami is physically not here. Even when Swami is staying in Vrindavan, you know, Swami's room was on the first floor. And the ground floor is the Thrai Vrindavan hall and the Jhula room where Swami used to give the Thrai sessions. So all of you boys will be sleeping in the hall and the Jhula room when Swami is sleeping above. And that time, Prem, I suddenly realized that in one stroke, Swami had solved all my problems. You know, that first night, if I can call it so, when I was lying in Thrai Vrindavan, I was sleeping on my bed. Swami was not there, of course, physically, but I was just looking up and thinking, you know, just above this roof here is the room where Swami sleeps. And I could not sleep. The first night, I could not sleep there at all. I was just thinking that I was seeking Swami and I felt that Swami did not respond, but he has done something far beyond my imagination. And every night at 9:30 to 10, I said, was the most bothersome. From that day onwards, every day from 9:30 to 10, I was just lost in Swami because I'm sleeping just few feet away from his bed. And that feeling got heightened when Swami was actually in Thrai Vrindavan.
Right.
I'm seeing up at the roof and thinking, you know, just above here is Swami. It's Swami, it is Swami. And I saw that all my attachment to my friends simply dropped away. And it was not because I inculcated detachment. It was because all my thoughts, my feelings now got directed towards Swami. And I felt, what a magic Swami does. Detachment is such a tough thing. Great yogis do penance for that. But Swami gets you out of attachment by simply getting you attached to a purer form, the purest form of love, which is God's love. Get attached to God and you automatically get detached from the world. And I felt such gratitude in my heart.
And it's almost like, even as you narrate it, what comes to my mind is that analogy which Swami gives of putting a fence around a sapling. Right, you know, actually what you had to do was give up that attachment which was coming through your friendship. But Swami removed you from that situation, almost put a fence around you, you know, till a point where you could actually reach a state where you could get into relationship without getting attached.
Exactly, Prem. And it was during those times when I used to sleep there in Thrai Vrindavan that many insights came.
Right.
One of them was, I can say that maybe I got the solution for this unrequited love. You know, when you're thirsty, what do you want?
Water.
Yeah, you want to drink water, right? So, whether the water comes in a cup, in a porcelain cup, or in a bottle that you open and empty it, or, you know, in some airports we have these taps. From the tap it comes out. For you it doesn't matter, right? You just are thirsty and you want water. And you drink it wherever it comes from. I felt that we are all thirsty for love. We are thirsting for love. But the difference is, instead of seeking love, we seek the instrument through which we get the love. You know, it's like, I'm getting water from this tap. Tomorrow, if there's no water in the tap, and there's water in a bottle, I will not, if I'm thirsty, I will straight go to the bottle and drink from the bottle, right? But when it comes to love, today I'm receiving love from this person, say. Tomorrow, if I stop receiving that, I do not give up that person. I still hanker. It is like going and sucking at a dry tap. I feel that when we start loving the tap more than the water, that is when love becomes attachment. Because love is always for the water. We have to seek love and not the object of love. Many times we miss water that is kept cool, refreshing water in the bottle because we are sucking at a dry tap. And when I looked back at the days when I used to be sick, I felt that that was what was happening. I'm so much looking forward to water from the dry tap that I'm missing all my friends who are by my side trying to encourage, trying to get me my food, trying to help me. Why? Because I'm looking for love only from that person. And I feel that is an important lesson for us when it comes to love, that we should not get confused. We should not confuse love with the object of love. That object has received the chance to be an instrument of God's love for a certain time. After that, God may choose to shower His love on us through some other instrument. We should be ready to receive the love and not get attached to the object of that love.
Very true. And Arun, even as you were saying this, a question arose in my mind and I did get an answer myself, but I don't know how convincing it would be. You know, even as you were saying this, isn't Swami also an object through which Swami's love is coming? You know, that was a question which arose in my mind. And is it like, just as you turn away from a dry tap and look for another tap which would be a source of water, is that how we have to turn away from Swami too when, you know, that love is not apparently coming forth? You know, that was a question which came to my mind, and I felt that is why Swami says, love is my form. That form which we turn to, it is not a form through which love comes. That form itself is love.
Exactly.
And I feel that is why Swami says, love is my form. This is not like the other forms which you see through which love comes.
Correct.
This is not a vessel which carries love. This vessel itself is love. And that is why, you know, at any point, we don't need to turn away from Swami, just like how we turn away from the others who are source of that love.
There are so many more thoughts regarding this point that you have raised, Prem. But I feel I'll reserve the thoughts. We'll take a short break now. It has been an intense session in every way. At least it has been for me. So maybe we'll take a break and then we can discuss further on this point.
Yes, definitely. We'll play a nice short song here and we'll come back and carry forward our discussion.
చేరాము కన్న తల్లి ప్రేమలో కరగిపోయాము ఏ దివ్య వరము నీ చేయి పట్టి నడిచాము ఏ దివ్య వరము నీ చేయి పట్టి నడిచాము సాయి ప్రేమ వాటలో తొలి అడుగులు వేశాము సాయి ప్రేమ వాటలో తొలి అడుగులు వేశాము శాంతిదాయి
Prem, you asked such a deep question and I thought of taking, you know, that we should take a break to ruminate over that question. But the song was so beautiful that in between our thoughts, it took us into it. Ni prema vaibhavam nayanotsavam.
Right.
The glory of your love is a festival for the eyes. Beautiful. The song was so beautiful and there is a lot of inspiration in the song.
Referring to God is... You know, the one who bestows the beauty of love. Premamrita Dayini.
Yeah, the nectar of love.
The nectar of love.
Prem, you asked a question as to if water runs dry from the tap which we call Swami's form, should we leave the form and go on to some other tap which has water? As I was thinking about this, the thoughts that came to me were this, you know. For everything to start off, there is something that is taken on faith.
Right.
When it's geometry, it's a corresponding angle's axiom. Like that for everything, you know, there is something that is accepted on faith, there is an axiom, after which the entire superstructure is built. So, when it comes to matters of the heart and God, let us accept the fact that whatever God does is good for us. If we start from this, for example, what has happened, why I am saying this is because this is how my journey has been.
Mm-hmm.
In my heart, I am convinced that Swami is not doing anything wrong. He is doing for my good. Now, with that conviction, when I see this, when the tap called Swami goes dry, instead of me wanting to leave the tap, it made me wonder, it made me ponder on another deep question. And I will ask that question from you now. And the question is, do I love Swami or do I love what Swami gives? Because when we say that the tap has run dry, we mean that positive experiences from that person are not forthcoming. That is, if I am crying and the other person doesn't come and wipe out my tears, according to what we are discussing, the tap has run dry. So I look out for somebody else who will wipe out my tears. Now when it comes to Swami, we have seen in many cases where Swami has apparently not responded. He is not, people have sought him for years and Swami has not even looked at them. So by our current definition of dryness, the tap has gone fully dry there. But there have been so many stories of people coming back and telling how in the past that apparent dry period was so vital for them that it taught them lessons. When you ask this question, it made me wonder, do we seek Swami or do we seek what He gives? Because if we seek what He gives, then when He doesn't give, we no longer seem to have love for Swami, we leave Him. If we seek Swami, then irrespective of what He gives, whether it is joy or sorrow, we love Swami. So it comes to the question, do we love Swami or do we love the things that Swami gives us?
And I think it again brings us back to the question we started with.
Mm.
You know, we all feel that love, you know. And as I said, it is somewhere buried in our attachment, somewhere buried in our, you know, love which we have for the fellow being or for the person who is most dear in our life. That universal love is there. But, you know, it's packaged and so well concealed in attachment and attraction and afflictions that we are not able to see the pure love.
Correct, Prem. Right? Because...
And I feel... In our journey with Swami, Swami is giving us an opportunity to bang this packaged love on His pure love so that, you know, all that is not part of this love falls off.
Hmm.
A simple analogy which I can think of is, you know, we all studied chemistry, both of us have studied chemistry. A very common question which used to come up in organic chemistry, you know, they used to say product A reacts with product B and gives product C.
Correct.
Explain.
Hmm.
You know, they won't say product A plus product B. What do you get product C?
Hmm.
Because most often in organic chemistry, you can never certainly say what I'm going to get as the predominant product.
Correct. Okay. When product A and product B react, there's usually going to be 100 products that are coming out.
Yeah.
But the predominant product is stated as the product.
Right. And most often we won't know what will be the predominant product. We can give the list of products which can come.
Correct.
But what is generally done in our exams is it is said that this is the predominant product. Can you explain? So accordingly, we can say what happens in the reaction.
Correct.
And I feel that is the same thing with our relationship with Swami. Like, you know, what has to be constant is, Swami loves me. Full stop.
Hmm.
Right? And we are trying to perfect our love for Swami based on Swami's reaction.
Hmm.
Right? In any situation, if we see that, you know, Swami is not talking to me, but Swami loves me, then there's something wrong in the way I am looking at Swami. There's something wrong in the way I am looking at Swami's love, because if Swami's love is not looking perfect to me, it is not that Swami's love is not perfect. Then there's something, some imperfection in my perception.
Whether you are right or wrong, Prem, what you say is really useful at a personal level.
Right.
See, recently one of my friends had visited Prashant Sinhalyam and his wife was coming to Puttaparthi for the first time.
Okay.
And she went to have darshan. In Kulwant Hall. You know, she did not know Swami. She came to know Swami because of her husband, you know, who was my friend.
Right.
And after that, she has developed a kind of mad love for Swami. She cries many times saying that, why did I come so late? Why I could not see Him? And, you know, she pines for Him, misses Him, craves for Him. And so it was with great longing that she wanted to go to the Kulwant Hall.
Okay.
And when she went to the Kulwant Hall, the security people there told her that, you know, she was wearing a sleeveless dress, which is not appropriate for the Kulwant Hall. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, she has to sit separately behind. She cannot go till the Mahasamadhi. And she felt so disappointed because, you know, the thoughts that come at that time is, in God's darbar, all are equal. Your caste, your creed, your clothing, nothing matters. It's only the heart, and I'm having a heart filled with love. How can you stop me? And I did not know this. Why are you not loving me? All these thoughts. And that turned into anger, turned into irritation. Few hot words exchanged. The volunteer there was quite, you know, calm and saying, no, calm but firm.
Right.
And she was turned back. And I know this because I was with my friend when she came, returned to the room crying.
Okay.
And she said, you know, what is this? I wanted to see. Swami never allows me to this. And what is this? Then my friend told her, you know, you just change your dress and go there. And she said, no, I will not. I'm pained. I'm this. I don't want. And at that time, you know, the thing that he explained to her was so beautiful. He said, see, ever since I have told you about Swami, you say that you want Swami, right? He said, yes. Swami is everything for you, you say, and you're ready to do anything for Swami.
Mm-hmm.
She said, yes. Then he said, and now, having said that, now see what Swami will be thinking. He will be thinking that I sent one lady to tell you that you are not allowed this way, and that's it, you have given up your desire to see me. Suddenly her tears dried up. She said, oh my God. He said, yes, that is the thing it is. If you are telling that Swami, I'm ready to do anything for you, and here Swami says, okay, don't have to do anything. Just ensure that this one lady doesn't upset you and you come. You're not able to do even that. At that point, this is exactly what I felt, Prem, that whether what he's telling is true or not, it definitely helps her to think that way.
Right.
It helps her to become more equanimous. You see, because when she gets upset that way, who is getting upset? I mean, the Kulwant Hall doesn't suffer. The volunteers there don't suffer. Nobody in the world suffers. She's the only one suffering. And it's a loss for her. So thinking this way actually helps to minimize the pain and loss for herself. It is like wearing a slippers when an area comes full of thorns. The slippers won't hurt the thorn just like the thorn hurts you. Nothing is going to change. It will just ensure that you don't get pricked. So in that manner, this kind of thinking that, you know, whatever Swami is doing is right, and therefore let me see what I can do, is not only safe for us, it's also beneficial for us.
Right. And the other way of looking at it is, as you said, are we seeking Swami or seeking what Swami gives? I mean, if you just plainly see why we have come to Swami, you know, it is like, because Swami gives joy and removes pain.
Correct.
Right. That is what, you know, invariably it boils down to.
Yes.
The basic reason why the mass of people actually turn to God.
Yeah, that was the reason I also turned to Him.
All of us, I mean, let's be honest. Because Swami gives joy and removes pain.
Correct.
Swami gives protection and removes insecurity. If we are really seeking Swami and not what Swami gives, then are we ready to love Swami the same way we love Him if He is going to give pain and take away joy? And I think that is what is the question. If each one of us are able to answer honestly, we will know whether we love Swami or not.
And I think each one of us gets a chance to answer this question directly through a practical examination with Swami.
Exactly.
And it's up to us to pass that examination. Beautiful, Prem.
And in fact, you know, I'm just reminded of what one of the devotees was narrating some time ago, you know. He came to Swami in a pretty self-sufficient manner. He was quite well off. He was doing quite well in business. But at a point, Swami said, you know, that you will go through a period where you will lose most of your wealth. But remember that I'm doing this for your good.
Okay.
And Swami said, are you ready to go through it? Will you hold on to me if I put you through that?
This Swami physically or through a
dream? Physically.
Okay.
Swami told him, are you ready to go through that? So he said, yes, Swami, I am ready to accept whatever you are giving me. I have come to accept the joy you are giving me. If you are telling that I am going to give you this pain, I should be ready to accept it. Because here was Swami saying that I am going to do this to you. I am going to take away, you know, all your wealth. Will you hold on to me? And I think that is a period which each one of us will go through, where, you know, what is most dear to us will be pulled away from us, and are we ready to say, Swami, I love you? And I think that is the poem which Swami wrote to his students.
Oh, you left the story there? What happened to him? I mean, he
lost. Yeah, what happened? He did lose all his wealth, but he didn't lose Swami. He did hold on, and it's a very long story, and maybe in some other satsang we will bring in how it came. It did happen, you know. And in fact, at one point, there were other devotees who came to Swami and said, Swami, your devotee, he's suffering like this. And Swami said, he's not suffering. He knows it is out of my love.
One thought that comes to me now is, Prem, irrespective of whether Swami physically tells us that now I'm going to put you through this, are you ready to hold on to me? When we have accepted Swami as the most loving and the most powerful, isn't it logical to think that whatever is happening to us, that Swami has planned it that way?
Absolutely.
So, irrespective of whether Swami physically asks us, can we promise to him telling, Swami, whatever may happen, yes, I will hold on to you. Because the best way to get out of the false love, the attachments, is, as you know, as I learned from that experience, as we stated before, is to get a stronger attachment towards Swami. If your attachment to God, attachment to pure love, attachment to Swami is stronger than attachment to the world, the other things automatically drop off. Detachment becomes so easy.
Exactly. That's what Swami says. The only attachment which can remove all other attachments is the attachment to God. And I think it happens to most of us, you know, when we have given up something which is most dear to us so spontaneously and readily that it even surprises us because we love Swami.
Correct.
You know, how many people we have heard of, they come as non-vegetarians and it doesn't take them any effort to give it up. The moment they feel that, you know, Swami doesn't like it.
What makes them give it up? Because they're so attached to Swami.
Right. And that other attachment just falls off without any effort.
And I feel that is what we should seek. Because Swami says, seek that, seeking which you will never have to seek again.
Right.
Get attached to that, getting attached to which you will never have to get attached again to anything else. Know that, knowing which you will never have to know anything else again. And that wholesomeness, that completeness is God, pure love, Swami. And I feel that is why we should do that. Yes.
You know, just as we are talking this, one of my classmates narrated this very powerful thing about his father. In fact, he even narrated it in front of Swami during our, you know, passing out program.
Gratitude program,
you know. It seems his father was a chain smoker before he came to Swami. And he and a friend of his first came to Swami for the first time, you know, they just landed up in Puttaparthi. They didn't know anything about Swami's program or about what happens in Puttaparthi. They just landed up here and they realized that Swami was not in Puttaparthi. Swami was in Vrindavan. Okay, and they were a little disappointed. So they went out and there was a there was a small shop outside the ashram. And there, this father of my friend, he picked up a cigarette. And the other person had the habit of eating paan.
Okay.
So he picked up paan. So they were eating and, you know, the friend of this, you know, my friend's father, he said, sir, you keep smoking and I'll keep eating paan till Swami comes. Okay? And so this person, you know, he just told in that, you know, a moment of frustration or whatever, he said, what sir, you're talking about smoking. If Swami comes now, I will give up smoking right now. Okay. And he hardly finished that statement, he heard some honking sound and they turned back and Swami was driving in.
Wow.
All of a sudden, nobody in Puttaparthi even expected it. Swami just drove into Puttaparthi for a day. And Swami went back later. And he just saw Swami and that was the last cigarette he smoked.
Wow.
And we all know how difficult it is to kick in a habit like, you know,
smoking.
So it's just that at that moment, Swami attracted him so much, attracted him so strongly that it was with no effort, he just gave up the other attachments.
I feel if we pine that way, that attraction, you know, towards God is also God's gift.
Exactly.
See, for example, if you take the life of Saint Annamaya. Annamaya is a great saint whose songs are being sung even today. They enthrall devotees even today. Imagine a person who knows nothing, just hearing the words of his songs and the tune of his songs, gets love for God in his heart. That is the magic of Annamaya's songs. But if you look at Annamaya's life story, he was nothing special. In fact, he was a handsome youth. And in his youthful exuberance, he was in love not with romantic love, not with one, but with two girls.
Okay.
And he felt that what else was needed in life? But call it his good karmas or good actions or his aptitude or whatever, God decided that the time had come for him. And so, Vishnu comes down in the form of a Brahmin. That is what it is said. Actually, what happened was a Brahmin. He happened to accost a Brahmin on his way. But story and legend says that it was Lord Vishnu himself. This Brahmin says that, why are you hankering after those two girls so much? And Annamaya says, because I'm going to marry them. And that's it. Life will be just one joy after another. He says, how can you say so? He says, have you seen them? What ravishing, beautiful girls they are. Such beauties are, you know, a thing of beauty is a joy forever. They are going to be, and that's all I need. And then this Brahmin says, I will show you something that is far more beautiful than them. He says, is that so? If you show that, then I'll chase that thing. And then the Brahmin takes him to the shrine and shows him the statue, the idol of Lord Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
And that is God's grace, Prema. At that point in time, that attraction that comes in, it maddens Annamaya. And in an instant, he gives up his desires for everything. The two girls whom he felt would be his life. Actually, that doesn't change destiny. If you see, after a few years, after a few months, in fact,
okay,
Annamaya is married off to both these same two girls.
Okay.
But now, even those two girls now become mad after their love, after God, mad in their love for God. Annamaya becomes so crazed in his love for God that his parents feel that the only way to bring him back to sanity is to get him married. And these two were, you know, his previous objects of desire. They have such a irresistible pull on him, and that is why they get him married to them. But the pull of the Lord's love is so much, so intense, that instead of him getting pulled by these two, he pulls these two onto the path of God.
Devotion.
Path of devotion to God. And in fact, both of them, both of his wives, you know, had the great fortune of dying as Sumangalis. Dying as Sumangali means dying when your husband is still alive. In India, it is considered a great honor that the wife is able to leave before the husband. And both of them die at the same moment, singing the glory of the Lord and lying on Annamaya's lap. And the best thing is, at that moment, Annamaya is not perturbed at all. He says, Lord, you are cutting away my bondages one after another so that I can focus entirely on you. And that kind of equanimity, just imagine, a person is not able to spend 3 days if the object of his love is not in touch with him or her. But Annamaya, both of them die at the same moment and yet he's unperturbed. That is the kind of equanimity, the composure, the, you know, the kind of true joy that one finds within when one finds true love. And Swami says that true love comes only from God, because he says happiness is union with God.
And that ability of love to sublimate everything else, you know, that is the beauty. Because once, you know, somebody was telling that every emotion that a human being undergoes, it need not be removed completely. It needs to be sublimated.
Transformed.
That is what has happened to each of our emotions, you know.
Mm.
When Swami says, fear, make it fear of losing God's love.
It becomes a noble thing then.
It becomes a noble thing. And you say attachment, be attached to God.
It becomes a noble thing.
It becomes noble. So all our flaws which are already there, they're not being removed. But they're just being replaced with something which is similar, but which is something so much more divine.
And that is the magic that Swami's love does, Prem. I remember a story of a teacher of martial arts. Okay. A student comes to him. The student doesn't have a left hand. And he says that, you know, master, I want to learn martial arts, but I'm useless. The master says, don't worry, I will make you the champion of the kingdom. And he wonders how it's going to happen. So his master teaches him, he sincerely learns. But anytime he has a confrontation with anybody, when he spars with anybody, he loses always. He's getting disappointed, but his master tells, do you have faith in me or not?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, master, I have. If you have faith, then just do what I say. But master, all the last 15 matches I have lost, you just do as I say. And finally the master goes and challenges the champion of the kingdom.
Okay.
And his disciple says, master, are you mad? What are you doing? I'm not having one limb. Master says, continue to have your faith in me. And when he continues, the master tells, I'll teach you one move. He teaches him one move. And he says, you do this move on that person. So he says, okay. And the master says, all the training that you received till now was so that you learn this move. All that was required for this, and that's why it took time. The student still doesn't understand, but he decides to follow his master. He goes and does that move, and the champion is defeated, and everybody is shocked. The disciple himself, because he says, Master, I never knew what I'm capable of. How did this happen? Is it such a move that nobody can beat? He says, no, it's a very simple move. Anybody can beat. Then he says, then why didn't the champ not defeat me? He says, the counter for this move involves gripping the left hand. And here, you know, you don't have a left hand. And that's it. That's why nothing could be done and you won it. And that is what Swami does to each one of us. Once we, in all our faith and all our love, offer ourselves to Him, He transforms each of our weaknesses into such strengths that we will look back and tell, Swami, I never thought I could do this. Swami says, yes, just have faith and everything will be done.
Exactly. I mean, especially this emotion of fear, whenever I look at it, no? How much Swami has used this emotion to bind us closer to Him. You know, there is this term which in Indian languages which you use, it says bhaya bhakti. Hmm. It says devotion with fear.
Hmm.
Like, you know, when Swami sometimes gives us a command, not always we follow it out of love, but most often we follow it with, you know, out of fear. Because we all know what are the repercussions if we don't follow Swami. But even that is used as a means of bringing us closer to God. No. And coming back to this thing of when you have attachment to God, all the other pains fall off, and all the other what you hold dear to yourself fall off. No, I'm just reminded of a very powerful incident which happened. There were this devotee whose sons were studying in Swami's college. You know, two of his sons were studying in Swami's college, and Swami was performing the wedding of one of his sons.
Oh, okay.
And the other son was abroad. So he was supposed to come for the wedding. So Swami fixed the date.
And you said he wasn't... Oh, they had passed out of Swami's college.
Yeah, they passed out of Swami's college.
Okay.
So Swami is performing the wedding of one of the sons, the elder son. And, you know, Swami is drawing the plans. Swami is telling them what to do. Swami had apparently chosen the girl for the boy and all that.
We know what details Swami gets
right
into.
And this was one of those fortunate families. So Swami called them inside. And the day when Swami was... you know, fixing the format for the invitation, the marriage invite which would go out.
Mm-hmm.
Swami said, put your other son's name also.
Who, the one in America? America?
I don't know which country, somewhere abroad. Swami said, put his name also, and this is the girl. I'll tell that family. And then and there, Swami is fixing the marriage of this boy.
Younger boy.
Yeah, who is not even present there. And immediately the father said, no, Swami, I don't think he wants to get married, because every time I raise this topic, he doesn't seem to be too pleased. So I don't think he wants to get married. I think I should have a word with him. Swami said, no, you don't have to. Just put his name. I will tell him. Okay, so imagine, on the spot, this boy's marriage is fixed, even without his knowledge. Mm-hmm. Of course, the other party
without was... Without his knowledge, without his consent.
Without his consent. And the invitation is, you know, printed. The next day is the marriage and the boy lands. Swami calls the...
Did the father tell the boy that?
No, no one has told the boy.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so he's
so
kind
the,
of...
He's going to be bride knows... And right. The parents of both sides know, but the boy doesn't know.
Except this boy.
Okay.
And he's the one who doesn't want to get married.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the day before the wedding, Swami calls all the families for an interview. And this boy also comes. Imagine the next day is the wedding. Swami says, give me the invitation. Okay, Swami takes the invitation and Swami gives it to the boy, the brother who has just come, who doesn't know that he's getting married. Okay. And Swami is giving the invitation to him. And Swami is keenly watching his expression. Swami wants to see what his expression is.
Mm.
Is he going to revolt? Is he going to get shocked?
My God. You know? What, if we can call divine pranks or...
Yeah. Of course, you know, Swami would have been aware of what was going to come. But you can imagine the emotions of all the others.
Correct.
In the interview room.
Mm.
You know, what would this boy's...
And that too is strongly against marrying.
Yeah. And so this boy calmly reads the whole invitation. And there is not even a twitch on his face. There is no expression on his face.
Hmm.
He just reads the whole thing, closes the invitation and gives it back to Swami.
Hmm.
And Swami is saying, what? So I was like, I expected some reaction.
Some shock.
Okay, something, some revolt, some, you know, at least happiness.
Okay.
There was no reaction at all. He said, yes, Swami, what is it? Swami said, you are getting married tomorrow. He said, okay, Swami.
Hmm.
Is it okay with you? Yes, Swami, okay. you said you don't want to get married. I said, it's fine, Swami. Whatever Swami does is for my good. I don't have to think about it. If Swami has decided, then it's fine with me.
Mm.
And it seems Swami was so happy with that. So happy with that boy's reaction. Swami was the first person to burst out of the interview room and tell everybody else sitting there. Mm. This boy reacted like this. So, you know, it's a perfect example of some decision which that boy had made. Or, you know, maybe that he didn't want to marry, or maybe he didn't want to marry immediately. But he was so ready to give it up. It is so difficult for us to give up something which we have decided, something which we have chosen for somebody else. But when it is, you know, when your relation with Swami is so strong and it's so binding and so pure, that these decisions just fall off. And these attachments just fall off. They don't bind you at all.
I think the challenge today would be, not today, even before, that there are a few examples like this for us to look up to, you know, where it is shown that
right.
How this boy, Swami is physically involved. Even when Swami was physically present amidst us, not everyone had this chance of such interaction.
Right.
But I feel, you know, when the mouth is fed, the whole body is nourished. In the same way, we should learn from these experiences. Can we also, you know, irrespective of what happens to us in life, accept it as God's will and be happy and move on without cribbing, crying and complaining to everybody? It often happens. You know, we go around to the world crying out and cribbing as if we are the ones having the most problems in the world. And never for a minute we think of the problems that others might be having. You know, everybody has problems. But this kind of attitude, this is a wonderful solution. If we truly love Swami, we should be able to accept anything that happens to us as good for us.
And you know, something which somebody told me before I got a job, you know, a very powerful statement, and I feel there's so much of wisdom in it, and love to share it at this point. You know, he said, whenever you make a prayer to God, you always remember every prayer is a commitment. And it's a very profound thing, because, you know, always we see prayer as something asking from God, you know, something where you've made a petition and you're waiting for it to come. But here was this person saying, every prayer that you make is a commitment, your promise you're making to God.
How is that so?
Let us say that you go to Swami and say, Swami, take care of my life. Or, you know, may you be the one who monitors every action of my life. If you make that prayer, which means you are making a promise that whatever happens to my life, I will take it as you are doing. If you go to Swami and say, Swami, I want to do whatever you tell me to do, which means you're making a promise to Swami that I will do what you tell me. It is like you're making a promise and you cannot go back on it. So I think all of us as devotees have made this prayer to Swami. That Swami, take control of my life. I will not cry if you're going to take control of my life.
You know, even boiling it down to simpler things. If I say, Swami, today I want to get the top rank in the university. The problem is we never know what are the repercussions going to be. In science, it's called the chaos theory, which says that a flap of a butterfly's wing can cause enough disturbance to create a tornado in Mexico.
Right.
You know, that's how interconnected the whole universe is, and that's how things pan out in the future. That is something we are not aware of. We pray for something. How many times it has happened, Prem, that we pray for something and it happens, but happens in a manner that we didn't expect. And we repent having prayed for it. It may be anything, whether it's financial matters, it's a position, you seek a job, you want this. I know in my own experience, I've come across people who have sought a job. They desperately want it because they feel it perfectly fits their profile. But once they get the job, the office environment is so bad that they repent having sought it. In that way also, every prayer is a commitment. If you pray, are you committed that you give me this job and whatever the job brings along with it, I'm ready to face it? We are not. And that's why I feel, let us not pray for anything such at all.
And you know, it goes back to that small interaction which happened in Trayi. As students, we all have heard this narrated to us. When a boy got up and Swami asked him, hey boy, what will you do for me? Swami, he said, you know, out of his immense love, he said, Swami, I'm ready to die for you. Because that is what we think is the greatest thing we can do for somebody whom we love. When you say that, I'm ready to die for you. And Swami said, I don't want you to die for me, I want you to live for me. One thing is to live a life of commitment. The other thing is, it is very easy to give one moment to God.
Death is one moment.
Right. But it is much, much more difficult to live every moment for God.
Hmm.
And when we say that prayer is a commitment, it's a commitment for life. When you say, Swami, whatever you do, I will take it as good for me. It is like every moment. It is so much more difficult. And I think that is where that true love comes. When your love is so strong, and as we said, you know, when you look at God and you love God and not what God gives, that is where every moment gets transformed into that state of pure love.
And though we are discussing like this, it is not as if it's a very tough path, Prem, because the rewards are tremendous. It's just little paradoxical, if I can say so, that if you enter the path thinking that the rewards are wonderful, it doesn't seem to work out. But really accepting everything as Lord's will brings such bounties, wonders, magic and miracles in one's life. I can proclaim it from the hilltops if necessary. Because I have seen that happening, some amazingly difficult, impossible situations from which not only me, different people have been extracted out simply because they were not ready to let go of Swami. Because even if we think logically, when we stop reasoning and planning out our lives and allow the planning to God, God who knows the past, present and future and has control over everything will obviously come up with a plan that is the best. So though it apparently seems to be going through a low, ultimately, it will be definitely much better than what we are thinking or we are wanting to do.
And actually, this is where it brings that point of the definition which Swami gives for love.
Hmm.
I don't know if you're aware of that. Once Swami went up to Dr. Gokak, the first vice chancellor of our university. And Swami asked him a very simple question. Swami said, Gokak, what is love?
That's not a simple question.
The same question we started with.
Hmm.
You know, I said it's a simple question because knowing what Mr. Gokak, Dr. Gokak is, he was a gold medalist in English literature from Oxford.
Doctorate.
Doctorate. And he was one of the first to rank, come first in Oxford University. A non-Englishman to rank first in Oxford University.
Oh, he ranked first in Oxford.
Right. Hmm. Okay, he was a gold medalist. So imagine, and Swami is coming and asking him a simple English word. Swami asked him, what is love? And he says he just blanked out. Because he felt with all his knowledge of this English language, he couldn't define that word. And he just stood there blank. You know, maybe like a kindergarten kid which was asked a question which was too much for you to answer. And he was just blank there, and Swami gave him a very sweet smile, you know, patted him and said, Gokak, love is selflessness. Self is lovelessness. And walked away. And later Gokak said, I just cannot think of a better definition for the word love than that.
Prem, I think our listeners are going to jump at your neck. You know, we have made them listen to more than an hour of our talking on love, love, love. And here is Swami's definition, which completes and gives us such a complete answer to what love is. Love is selflessness. And self is lovelessness.
And I think, you know, in a way, the discussion has led to this. That in any situation, you put aside what is dear to you, what you like, what you have chosen, for what God has chosen for you, or what God gives you. So it is a path of selflessness in its own.
Nice point to arrive at, and nice time to take another little break before we come to the concluding segment of this satsang. Maybe this is a point we play that beautiful song from a convocation drama, which says that all of us are nothing but sparks of God's love. We are your love, Swami.
A beautiful song, a very, very melodious song, which is, I think, one of the recent convocation dramas, I guess.
2008.
Right. So we will continue our discussion on the other side of the song.
प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं तेरी ज्योति का विस्तार हूँ मैं प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं तेरे ज्योति का ही प्रकार हूँ मैं प्यार हूँ तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं भौतिक क्षुद्र हूँ मैं विशाल हूँ कोई भाव मैं खयाल कोई गीत ही अविराम प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are in the final segment of our afternoon satsang, and the satsang has been on love, the misunderstanding of love, the different aspects of love, and we reached a conclusion, a beautiful definition of love that Swami had given, which was love is selflessness and self is lovelessness. Before that, Prem, as we discussed, do we love Swami or do we love what Swami gives us? Hearing this song, my memory got triggered about one incident that happened. I think it was 1994 or 1995. Mm-hmm. Swami had called all the students in for a Purnachandra session, a PC session as it used to be known, as it is known, where he would interact only with the students, and it used to be interesting and nice and different things would happen there. It was almost like an equivalent of the Trai session in Vrindavan, a PC session in Puttaparthi. That session, when they entered, they saw heaps of toiletries, you know, shaving brushes, shaving foams, then blades and soaps and toothbrushes, toothpaste, all of them in heaps.
Okay.
And when Swami came, they were all excited. They said, you know, they knew that there was going to be a distribution then. And Swami picked up one, threw it to somebody, picked up another, threw it to somebody else, and then, you know, generally instructed the students that, you know, distribute this. Give one each to everybody. And as the distribution went on, somehow it happened that, you know, some people got toothbrushes, somebody got toothpastes, some people got perfumes, some people got electric razors. And naturally, you know, kind of comparison began. The person who had a toothbrush wished that he would have got something grander to cherish from Swami. And then there was the person who had got the electric shaver, and he was wishing that it would be nice if he had got a perfume. It was not as if that the person who got the perfume was happy. He was feeling that it's only 100 ml and it'll get used soon. So throughout the life, there's no using this. I just have to store it because Swami has given it. So everybody was happy in a way. Everybody was sad in a way. Everybody lost in comparing. Suddenly somebody snapped his finger, you know. And if you remember, that used to be the way,
signal
for everyone to pay attention. And everybody looked up and they saw that Swami in the meanwhile had slowly walked and climbed the stage, and he was almost at the exit. So lost was everyone in comparing and looking and, you know, seeing what they had got, that they forgot that, you know, God had almost walked out. And then Swami turned. He said, "Boys, everybody got?" Yes, everybody had got something or the other. They all nodded. Swami said, "Okay, now tell me, which of you wants Swami?" And he turned and walked in. You know, that brings us back to that same point. Do we love Swami or love what Swami gives? Very often, we are so lost in comparing and contrasting what Swami has given different. It is not that he loves the person more and he gives a perfume bottle and loves the person less and gives a toothbrush. For Swami, it's just a heap of toiletries, that's all. And he just distributes it off random. Everybody get whatever. And we are so lost comparing these toiletries that we miss out the Lord's love. So the focus better always be on Swami, because as Swami said, when you have the Creator, the creation is automatically by your side.
And I think, you know, as I said, if we can perfect this love for God, if we can perfect this relationship with God, and if we can honestly answer this question where we say that, are we seeking what Swami gives or are we seeking Swami? And if we can tell for certainty, no, I love Swami. No, I want Swami and not what Swami gives. And if we can stick to this, I was just thinking, if we can apply this practically in our life, let us say that I do my work today and I say, "Swami, I'm doing this work for you." That is how Swami always says. Swami says, "Offer whatever you do for me." And if I do any work, let us say a professional work, if I'm going to say that, "Swami, I'm doing this work for you," the moment I say, "Swami, this is for you," and this, which means this is not for what you give me, right? So automatically you will stop expecting anything in return for this work.
Irrespective of the criticism, right, or the praise.
And you won't even expect love or grace from Swami in return. Because you're doing it for Swami, not what Swami is going to give you. And in that way, whatever Swami gives in the form of grace also is what Swami gives. It's not what Swami is.
Correct.
So automatically the concept of karma yoga becomes so spontaneous. You will do work only for the sake of doing it. And there will be no expectation whatsoever.
Wow.
So in this emotion of love itself is inbuilt karma yoga.
And if we can all understand this, or even if we don't understand it, if we can just practice it, I feel the rewards, the dividends will automatically come. We don't have to worry about it at all. That's the thing. That's what I said is that paradox, that we should not enter the path thinking that if we enter, we'll get it and therefore we are entering. We enter it because we want to enter it, and everything else gets taken care of. If we can make God our Valentine, because I feel God is the only person, God is the only being capable of being a Valentine. Because only He is capable of giving true love and eliciting true love from us. And that is why, you know, I feel Swami used to always say, see God in all. Because if we are able to love Swami like this, imagine if we make efforts to see Swami in everyone, then we can love everyone in the same way and become the embodiment of love that we are. We can remove out the impurities and become pure love ourselves. That is what the song we just now heard also said, "Pyar hoon main tera pyar hoon," which says, "Swami, I am your love. I am your love. Anand hoon main. I am your bliss. I am your peace." Can we become the Lord's love, the Lord's bliss, the Lord's peace? We can. And the way forward is to start by loving God with a capital L.
And ask ourselves, are we truly loving God? And that is the most important. And as you said, you know, one way is to look at, see God in everybody. And the other way is to go on perfecting this love which we have for God.
Hmm.
And the constant in that is God always loves me. And we are always trying to perfect this love. I think it will automatically reflect in us seeing God in everybody. Like, you know, a lot of our teachers used to take care of us so well, because not because they loved us. Not really because we meant they were so affectionate towards
us. Not because they were attached to us.
Right. Because they loved Swami so much. And there they saw Swami loving all his students. They felt that their love for Swami will not be complete if they do not love us.
Correct.
I think that's what would happen to each one of us. When we love Swami so purely and so perfectly.
Anything that is dear to him.
Right. We will love all his creation.
Because his creation is dear to
him. Right. Our love for Swami will not be complete if it does not flow the same way towards the entire creation.
Oh, that's a lot of points to ponder, Prem. And I'm sure that we too can spend many more afternoons and many more nights thinking about all these things, feeling it, but most importantly, practicing it and experiencing it ourselves, for that is where we find completion. That is the difference with spirituality and other things, you know. In spirituality, you're supposed to taste it and learn, because there's no other way to explain. How much ever it explained, it's not learned. So, praying to Swami with all love, humility and gratitude in the heart, that we are able to practice and experience the beauty that divine love brings every moment of our lives. We offer this satsang too, with gratitude at his lotus feet. And Brother Prem and myself, Arvind from Team Radio Sai, we sign off, and we shall meet you again next week at the same time. But before we leave, we will play a melodious song.
A lovely song, because this is the song which refers to God as the ocean of love. And it was a beautiful song, which was the final song during the Prema Praham program too.
If you during Swami's 85th birthday. Yes, that, let me just add this much, that this song, Tu Pyar Ka Sagar Hai, is a famous one, and it has been a part of life in Prashanthi Nilayam and life with Swami. It has been sung so many times. But the version that we are playing now is a very, very special version, where the wordings and the text of the song were suitably modified, and they match so beautifully. One can't help but think of Swami when this song is being played.
Yes, dear listeners, we're going to leave you with this beautiful song. And as this song ends, you will be joined with Chandu, who is going to bring more songs for you. Till then, happy listening.
सागर है तू प्यार का सागर है तेरी एक बूंद के प्यासे हम तेरी एक बूंद के प्यासे हम तू प्यार का सागर है तू प्यार का सागर है तेरी एक बूंद के प्यासे हम तेरी एक बूंद के प्यासे हम तू प्यार का सागर जिस पर तुमने साई जन्म लिया तुमने जन्म लिया दीन दुखी को गल युगोपकार किया, युगोपकार किया। चांद और सितारे भी, चांद और सितारे भी तेरी जयकार करेंगे सदा, तेरी जयकार करेंगे सदा। तू प्यार का सागर है, साई तुम ही प्राण सखा, तुम ही प्राण सखा। सब है पराए तुम ही दो अपने, तुमने प्यार दिया, तुमने प्यार दिया। कहते रहेंगे सदा, कहते रहेंगे सदा कि तुमसे हो न कभी भी जुदा, कि तुमसे हो न कभी भी जुदा। तू प्यार का सागर है, तू प्यार का सागर है। तेरी एक बूंद के प्यासे हम, एक बूंद के प्यासे हम। तू प्यार का सागर है, तू प्यार का सागर है।